Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
By the way, listeners, Graham will stick with us for the After the Paracast premium podcast for subscribers of the Paracast Plus. Check the Paracast.plus for more information about signing up. So you've heard me rant, because this is the kind of topic where you want to rant. What's your take on it, Graham?
Well, if we're looking at the topic entirely, that I guess with the information that's coming out now, they're looking at modern-day cases, because that's what they've got the most records for. That's what they've got the maybe video for. That's what they've got sensor data for, if you like. So I can understand why the modern focus is on much more up-to-date sightings, because they've got information they can analyze. If they're looking back, and they say they are going to look back to cases from 1945 onwards, they're going to have a much harder job, not only because the information back then is what it's on paper documents, but also there's so much of it, and it would be like a full-time job for, you know, a team of people to be able to enter that kind of information in some kind of database, you know, or just some kind of records which they could use to maybe find trends or to do some of the further analysis. If you cast your mind back to the 1950s and when Blue Book commissioned the Battelle Institute to actually do a computerized survey back then on punched card, through computers that way, they were only looking at, 5 years worth of data. And it took them absolutely ages to get that information, prepared and analyzed. And obviously now I know we've got much more up-to-date computers, but you still got to put the information in somehow. There is so much information in terms of flying saucer and UFO and all the rest of it, sightings and all the other things that happened, that I can imagine that's just a task beyond a small team like Arrow. Much as they say they want to go back to previous cases, I'm not sure how it's possible. I might be wrong, but I'm not sure how they're going to do it.
You made an interesting point earlier in the program, talking about how a lot of these older government military investigations, like Blue Book and Grudge, just kind of eventually petered out.
Yeah.
And, I wonder if we're just seeing history repeat itself with all of the renewed interest nowadays, that eventually it's going to be the same situation where the information is just really, it's just going to be more of the same with nothing conclusive, and that, they're just going to shrug their shoulders and close it down.
I guess it depends on what the next couple of interim kind of reports that they come out with say. They've just republished a report, or at least the unclassified section, which mentioned that they had so many cases and like just over half of them had been identified. What they didn't say was that if you add them all up from 2021 as well, then it was 510 cases in total, and they'd only managed to identify something like a couple of hundred, which was less than half. The first time around, it was one case out of 144 that they managed to identify, and this time round it was about 300 and odd cases, and I think they managed to identify something like 170, 180 of them. So the figures are changing, but it'd be interesting to see what happens, say, next year when they bring out the report then, and maybe they may go on to do another one, and then if those numbers change and they say, oh well, we can probably solve three quarters of them or 99% of them, then I'm sure they'll just close it, because that's what they would do, they would have done in the olden days. Whereas if they continue to come up with a significant number of cases where they simply haven't been able to assign any kind of explanation to them, then they'll have to keep it going, because for even just from an intelligence point of view, they'll want to know what the answer is, even if it's something that to us doesn't add up. But if it's something they can sell to their superiors, then they'll probably be able to close it down. But, if they don't have the cases to do it, they'll have to keep it going. And that's my opinion on it, as to how long it's going to last. But if you look back to, you know, the old cases, like in terms of Blue Book and Grudge and Sign, then yes, certainly they got the point where they went, you know, they pulled the plug on them.
Well, the other thing, of course, we have to consider is this time out, NASA is also investigating the phenomena. Now, you think if this is something involving a possible national security threat with a drone or a test aircraft, how does a space agency get involved?
Gene, are they actually investigating? Because as far as I understand it, they've allocated, what, $100,000, which in terms of NASA's budget, again, is probably like six toilet seats. I'm sure what they've said is that money is to go and look to see where they can look. It's not to do an investigation. So it's almost, we're paying $100,000 to look to see where the filing cabinets are. And that's what that is. So it's not an investigation. It's just it's a prelude to an investigation. So are they going to turn up anything? Are they going to get to a point where, well, we haven't got any records and we're not going to do it? Because it'll probably cost more money than $100,000. And would their scientists, were the people who work for NASA, not want to send a probe to Mercury, or would they not want to send a probe to Neptune, or would they want to spend that money, you know, looking for UFOs? I can see where that argument would go. So, you know, people say they're investigating, but I'm not entirely sure the heart's in it, to be honest. I'd be wrong, of course.
Well, the most recent release, and of course then the media headlines, you know, was saying that the statement was along the lines of no evidence of aliens found, which, you know, of course not, you know, unless they actually happened to shoot one down or landed in their backyard and they're able to get a hold of it, you know, of course not. But that has been, I guess, right almost from the very beginning, that pop culture expectation. You know, and people tend to think that, in the late 40s, that's what the military had immediately glommed onto was extraterrestrial, but that's not the case. As you had stated earlier, there was really a lot of worry that these could have been some kind of aircraft from the Soviet Union, or even possibly remnants of the Nazis hiding out in South America someplace.
Oh yeah, that's right. I mean, the big thing was that the U.S. Air Force or their air intelligence were looking for the Horten brothers. There was two brothers in Germany during the war who developed a whole fleet, different types of flying wing aircraft. Ones that were gliders, others that were driven by piston engines. And right at the end of the war, they had a design which was powered by jet engines. And of course, the Americans managed to capture the third prototype, which still wasn't finished at the end of the war. The second prototype flew under jet power but crashed, and the pilot was killed. That happened in February 45. So, there was always the fear that the plans or people who worked on actually building these things, not just the Hortons, but other people involved with the projects, had actually been taken to Russia, and that the Soviets were actually developing flying wing aircraft. And there's actually a document from the late 1940s, and it's quite a serious military intelligence document that says that they have it on reliable authority that the Soviets were developing a fleet of 1,300 Horten night fighters. Well, it was all rubbish, of course, but that's what they believed at the time. And whether they were being sold information that was wrong and they chose to believe it, I don't know. But, you know, they had it in their heads that somehow the Horten brothers, you know, either they were colluding with the Russians or information that they had been passed to them. But I questioned the Hortons were in Britain in 1945 and 1946, and they were back in Germany in 1947 in the West Zone, and then I think they travelled to Argentina afterwards. So they were never, you know, in the pay of the Russians. They never had any contact with the Russians. And that's not to say that information might have got to Russia, but through various agents, etc. But yes, you're right, Tim, there was this fear that the things that were being seen over America in 47 and 48, 49 had red stars painted on them. You have to go back to 1946 with what they called the ghost rockets, which happened over Sweden and Finland and some other parts of Europe as well, funny enough. And back in those days, in 1946, US air intelligence thought they might be Russian attempts to fire rockets over over Sweden as well.
We'll have more of that discussion with Graham and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, Graham, why don't you continue that thread for our listeners?
Yeah, so there was links between air intelligence in America and all from what was the what they called ATIC, the air technical air technology and intelligence center, in Wright-Patterson in Ohio, and people who worked there had links with Swedish Air Force as well, and they were trying to get information out of the Swedes as to what was going on over Sweden, because there were various reports of what they were calling rockets and various other objects that were being seen in the skies over Sweden. And of course, the south part of Sweden is only 60, 70 miles from the north of the north coast of Germany, and especially somewhere called Peenemünde, which happened to be where the VQ rocket was developed during the war and also test-fired. And they thought that the Russians had basically repurposed the base, the firing test stands and all the rest of it, to develop rockets that could be sent over Sweden. And, of course, that might have been a threat to America if they developed the rockets into something that could maybe have flown even further. Now, as it happened, the Germans blew up the facilities at Peenemünde in February 1945, so there was actually nothing there for the Russians to do, to use. And in fact, the Russians took everything they could find, and the technicians and the scientists, they took them back to Russia with them after a while, and they tried to develop their own rockets, and they succeeded in getting a copy of the V2 in about 1948, 1949. So, yes, it did happen, but not in the way that people thought it did. And certainly, as far as most people can tell, whatever happened over Sweden wasn't Russian rocket experiments.
In your book, and I'll find the page here really quick. Okay, it's on page 27, you have a drawing of a sighting that took place, in December 1946. And boy, that drawing looks an awful lot like a buzz bomb, a Nazi buzz bomb.
It does a bit, yeah. I can see where you're coming from.
It's just a superficial, resemblance. But
for the listeners, obviously, who can't see the drawing, it's got like a fuselage, and it's got no tail, but it's certainly got wings to it. And yes, but who would be flying V1s over Sweden in those days? Again, mm-hmm. The facilities in Peenemünde didn't exist to launch V1s from, and the Russians had basically taken all that stuff back to Russia. The Brits had tested or looked at V1s, but it was a dead-end technology. Pulse jet technology wasn't going to go anywhere. You couldn't fly aircraft with it, because a pulse jet can't get an aircraft off a runway. It doesn't deliver enough power to get something airborne. You've got to have a catalyst. You've got to have a something fired off a catapult, or you've got to have an air launch of something with a pulse jet, because it doesn't deliver enough power in that fashion. So, as I say, it was a dead-end technology. The Americans did experiment with a copy of the V1 called the JB2 Loon, and the US Navy did those experiments, but that was in 1946, 1947, and it was well away from Sweden. You can't sort of write it off as that either. But this particular object that you're talking about that was seen by the Swedish Air Force crew, it's weird whatever it is, but actually what they described, they thought it might look like a twin boom aircraft, like a Lockheed Lightning, a P-38 Lightning, or one of the Dutch Fokker G1 types of aircraft. But they didn't know what it was. But it was one of the few things that happened over Sweden. That one just happened to be a sighting by air crew. There were other people who were on the ground who saw various strange things as well. But of course, this book I wrote was about aerial encounters, so I didn't include those.
Well, and a lot of the Swedish ghost rockets ended up reportedly in lakes.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of lakes in Sweden, though, and especially in southern Sweden. If anybody's ever been there or they've travelled around that area, you'll know what I mean. So it would be quite probable that one or more of them would land up in a lake down there. But yes, you're right. It's very strange. And of course, there's always been this strand of thinking about there's a fascination by UFOs with water. Over the years, there's been connections, or people have tried to make connections with, they're trying to scoop up water, or there's some reason why they're fascinated with water. And now we have stories of UFOs potentially coming out of the water with these what they call transmedium objects, where they either go in or come out of the water themselves. So, yeah, there's always been this link somehow with water.
Well, talking about the Foo Fighters, the reports, the majority of the reports we have naturally come from, the Allied end, and they thought that they were dealing with some kind of Nazi secret weapon, but the Axis were also having their own sightings of Foo Fighters, weren't they?
This is where it gets a little bit weird, though, Tim, because a lot of people have anecdotal evidence about the Germans seeing them, but when you delve deeper into it, you can't find that many cases, and you can't find many cases that actually have any documentation attached to them. Now, when you look at the American side, you look at the British side, you can find documentary, you can find squadron logs that actually mention sightings, and there are even mentions of the words Foo Fighters, because that was a name that actually passed into the parlance. But German records, I know a lot of them were destroyed at the end of the war, but there are still quite a lot of Luftwaffe records out there, albeit they were probably shipped across to America. But so it might be a question of the fact that just nobody's either had the time or the means to go through these and look at, to try and pull out records of strange sightings. But there are some, at least, and they're stories by pilots who have come forward in the post-war years to say that they saw strange things. But unfortunately, the numbers, you can count them almost on two hands, that they're very few and far between. There are stories by Soviet pilots as well, but I would treat some of those with a pinch of salt, because unfortunately, a lot of those stories came out in the kind of Glasnost period of the early 1990s. And that was a time, and I speak from experience because I actually travelled around Siberia in summer 1992. And we basically got around the country by bribing people. And we had fixers who, people would do things for money. And of course, there was a big thing back in the early 90s about investigators and people coming across from America to Russia to try and grab the KGB UFO files and things like that. And you can imagine people in Russia thinking, we can sell Americans, we can sell British these records, and if we don't have them, we can make them up. So I would treat stories coming from Russia, and not just because all the unpleasantness going on now with Ukraine, but I would treat them with a big pinch of salt, because much of the information that came out of Russia doesn't have a lot of kind of the bits you'd like to see around these stories. So they don't have the units involved, so you can't trace where these squadrons or these regiments or whatever were where they said they were. You don't even know what type of aircraft some of these pilots were flying when they encounter these objects. The stories, whilst they're quite descriptive, they're quite vague in the rest of the details. Now, of course, that might be just down to the Russian kind of their penchant for secrecy over the years because of the kind of totalitarian state that they all lived in back then. But it just seems to me odd that they can't even come out with, well, I belong to such and such a squadron, because they would have known what that was. And, in the 1990s, there wasn't a fear of retribution about coming out with information like that. So I'm a bit wary of some of the stories that came out of Russia, but the German ones, I'd love to see more. And I know people say, oh, well, the Germans saw them too, and I don't doubt it, but I want to see the evidence.
We're going to have more evidence coming up with Graham, Jean, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
USA News Update. Former President Trump making another run for the White House with rallies in New Hampshire and South Carolina.
We will get critical race theory and other left-wing lunacy out of our military, and we will get it out of our classrooms, and we'll get it out fast.
The Memphis Police Department has disbanded their Scorpion unit, a unit originally formed to help deal with escalating crime in the city. All five officers charged in the death of Tyree Nichols were members of that unit. At least six people were killed in upstate New York yesterday morning, three others injured when a truck collided with a bus on a highway on the Canadian border. Flooding in New Zealand so bad due to the torrential rain they're having, the airport had to close. That meant a flight from Dubai had to turn around and be sent back to where it came from. Those passengers on that plane for 13 hours and landed in the same place they took off. Corey Myers, USA News.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how did it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer. 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick. Easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam. Works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene. 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W. 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya. 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
When you bring up Russia, of course, we have considered getting a person on here who can tell us about Russian UFO research, and then the Ukrainian war started, and getting interesting contacts in Russia is difficult. China has had UFO investigations. Japan has had UFO investigations. China is also going to be difficult.
Again, yes, and for the same reasons, obviously, because of Russia, they're a very totalitarian state, and also human rights records, but we also have a beef about them, about what they're trying to do with Taiwan. So you can understand from the political situation that they're not the easiest people to try and deal with, even just on a normal level, let alone trying to get information about UAP or UFOs from them. So, yeah, I can understand that, and places like North Korea as well. But also some other countries around the world where it's not necessarily in their nature to give out information just, you know, because people ask for it. And the British are a bit like that as well. We have our government, our Ministry of Defence, has a mantra of, well, nothing's happened in the last 50 years, so there's nothing to the UFO issue. And yet we know that's not necessarily correct, because things have been seen in those 50 years that still defy explanation today. And things that are, you know, sort of either slightly involved with or things I've heard about. So, yeah, there's some, you sort of think at the end of the day, you know, what aren't you telling us? You know, why are you sticking to this mantra of nothing's happening when clearly we have information to the contrary?
Well, I mean, I always say that they don't like talking about it because they don't know, and they're not going to admit that they don't know.
Well, that's right, because as I said before, you know, you don't want to admit that you're, or you don't want to be embarrassed by the fact that you simply don't know what's happening, and you can't also control it, because back in the days that the book I've written about 1946 and 1949, but I went on to write a book about 50 to 52 cases as well called Flying Saucer Fever. And of course, when the American Air Force, they're sending up the latest jet interceptors, either by night or by day, to investigate strange things that have been like reported in the skies, and they can't end up doing anything about it. So they can't intercept them because they're not fast enough, they're not maneuverable enough, and these things just come and go as they please. You don't want to admit that to your public, that you can't defend your borders, you can't defend your airspace, because the next thing that comes over could be a Russian bomber with a nuclear bomb on board. And of course you don't want to give the impression almost to your enemies as well that you can't control your airspace, because who knows what might happen if somebody else thinks that there's a potential weakness here. So yes, I can understand why there's all this involved around trying to shut this subject down.
Speaking of the your book dealing with the early 1950s, there's been allegations, and I think that this may have happened after the UFOs over Washington over those 2 weekends, that there was an order given to shoot them down. There's a debate whether or not that actually happened or not.
Yeah, there is a debate, and they've categorically denied that that happened. There is a book called Shoot Them Down as well. I think it was Frank Fischino wrote that, and it goes into detail about the merits of that particular argument. It's certainly that they did send aircraft up, and some of the aircraft occasionally probably were armed, because why wouldn't you have alerted aircraft? Back in those days when there was always a threat of things coming over the pole carrying bombs and all the rest of it, that you would have aircraft which had either air-to-air missiles or guns or air-to-air rockets on board. So, yes, there was also the potential for conflict. But even if they weren't armed and they were just sending these aircraft up, they couldn't catch them. They couldn't intercept them. They still didn't even able to identify what these things were. So if it was another aircraft or it was a weather balloon, then the pilots would say. And I'm sure there were lots of cases where they did go up and they did see things like that. It was either an airliner which is straight off course and radar picked up and they intercepted. And, yeah, okay, that's fine. And that story went nowhere. But in case after case after case, you hear of F-94 Starfires, or you hear of F-89 Scorpions going up, in late 40s, early 50s, and the pilots these things just run rings around them and then zoom off in the stratosphere and they're never seen again. And the pilots come back and they're just completely nonplussed. But you must think they must have been really frustrated, because their job is to defend American airspace, and they're going up time after time and they're coming back without anything to show from what they're doing. And the official explanation is you were chasing Venus or you were chasing a weather balloon. And just wonder the stigma that must have been attached to these pilots. What must they have thought? How must they have felt the next time they went up after a mystery contact as well?
Well, that had to be frustrating to the pilots to have their superiors, tell them afterwards, oh, well, you were just chasing Venus, or something like that. The chain of command, you can't talk back and say, oh, yeah, well, you go up there, you try to shoot them down.
Well, also, as well, if you're a commanding officer and you get a report back from Wright Patterson saying, your airmen saw Venus, and you've spent how much, money, fuel, and all the rest of it, sending a jet fighter off in the middle of nowhere to chase Venus. And also, just think of it this way, you've only got a certain amount of aircraft on alert status in a certain amount of air bases. And what happened if, for argument's sake, there'd been a sneak attack over the poles and you've got aircraft chasing after stars and planets? They could have been somewhere else doing something much more important. So there would be this huge pressure on senior officers to clamp down on reporting. And of course, there would have been reports that probably never, ever went anywhere, because the pilots would have got to the point where it's not worth reporting it. There's too much hassle, too much aggro, where I'm going to be, castigated for saying that I was chasing after something which turns out to be a weather balloon. And even they may not even launch the aircraft, because radar might have picked something up where they thought, it's nothing. But beforehand, they might have gone after it, and then they got to a point where they just wrote it off as a radar angel or something like that. Or if they did send aircraft out of it, then, it was come back, we're just chasing ghosts. but actually it could have been something that was real, and we'll just never know. But also with the airline pilots as well, they were reporting things, and then you get newspaper story after newspaper story, and then Air Force evaluation, you were chasing a weather balloon or you're chasing Venus. That must have got back to the companies as well. And of course, you can imagine commercial pressure. We don't want airline crews looking after passengers, safety of passengers, responsible jobs, to say they're chasing after Martians and all this kind of stuff, little green men. That's going to be stigma again. The airline pilots, they even had a meeting with Ruppelt in Chicago. There was a handful of pilots got together with him. He was on a layover between flights, and they were at him saying, about all the things they've seen, and a lot of them said, we're not going to report them because of the stigma, the hassle we're getting. So that must have just increased as well the longer it went on.
This is, of course, reminds me of the scene in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where they show a sighting by airline pilots early in the film. And then someone from air traffic control says, would you like to report this UFO? And the pilot says, no. Of course, you understand why, based on a lot of what you explain. Of course, today they're trying to convey the impression that's okay to report it.
Well, they're trying to convey the impression, but if you have a look to see where the cases come from, certainly the first UAP task force, it appeared that most of the cases were coming from the US Navy. And since 2004, when the Nimitz encounters that happened in November 2004, most of the aerial encounters, if you like, that appeared that have happened off the west and the east coast of America have involved the U.S. Navy and have involved U.S. naval aviators operating from carriers in military training areas. And there's been very, very little that seems to have come from the U.S. Air Force. And even the latest report, the classified report, it doesn't give a breakdown of the cases between the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force. It just says the number have increased. So we're still none the wiser as to whether the U.S. Air Force is actually actively engaged in the process at the moment. Because traditionally, at least since the end of Blue Book, and actually beforehand, they've been dragging their feet. And they don't seem to give the impression that they're that interested in it. They think it's rubbish.
Hey, before we get into more rubbish, we've got one more segment with Graham, and then he'll also be in the After the Paracast podcast with Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now. For prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have Graham Rendell. The title of the book, Dawn of the Flying Saucers, Aerial UFO Encounters and Official Investigations, 1946 to 1949. But we are also exploring the current situation since some of it mirrors what went on then. I think here with the Air Force's history and UFO investigation, maybe emotionally or politically, they wouldn't want to get involved. Let the Navy handle it.
It's quite possible. They've had their fingers burnt with ufology of UFOs since the late 1940s. So I can understand why maybe senior officers in the U.S. Air Force, they might have an idea of what's happened beforehand. And I'm sure with all the stigma and all the, you know, the wisecracks and the X-Files music and all the rest of it, that they simply don't want to go there. They want to concentrate on maybe what they think are much more important issues, and which they're probably right in terms of domestic concerns and world politics. They've got much more bigger things to think about, and I can understand why that would happen. But really, the U.S. Air Force are probably, you know, with the U.S. Navy, they're the best, you know, placed to actually come up with information about sightings, not just current ones, but also previous ones as well, because they must still have records of the intervening period between 1969 and 2020, when, as far as we're concerned, nothing seemed to happen in terms of U.S. Air Force involvement with UFOs.
You had talked about Air Force pilots getting to the point where, you know, they're just not even going to bother reporting anymore. Back in the 1990s, when I was working in television, I did a shoot one time where I flew with an aerial tanker squadron. And afterwards, talking to the pilot and co-pilots, and I have no idea how this point of the conversation came up. We started talking about UFO sightings, and both of them admitted that they had never seen anything, but then they proceeded to tell me stories about their friends who were also pilots and their sightings. And I'm like, oh my gosh, so, you know, did they report these afterwards? They're like, no. Are you kidding me? And they were surprised that I asked whether or not it was reported or not. And they're like, you know, you don't report those kind of things. Of course, this was, you know, back in the early 1990s. But at that time, that was the attitude. You may see something, but you're not going to say anything.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine that's the case. It would be the kind of thing that you'll probably have a quiet word with your buddies about, but you won't want to make it official because it'll just be too much hassle, and you never know what might happen afterwards, that you might get grounded, for instance. You know, you never know what it might lead to. So, yes, I can understand why people would be very, very reluctant to actually make them official, the reports.
Do you think there's do you think there's been any change in that? And, you know, we've seen the most recent media coverage of it, but I think those are really just a select few. And whether or not that stigma continues to, you know, whether it persists, you know, where, you know, most pilots are just like, I'm not going to say a damn thing.
Well, it definitely persists because, I mean, when you listen to news coverage and also news coverage in the UK, there's still a fairly dismissive attitude about the subject in general. And if you hear a radio piece or a TV piece, chances are it's preceded by the X-Files music or there's a reference to the X-Files in the commentary by the presenter. And usually the presenter doesn't have that much knowledge anyway. It's always very light in terms of the questioning. There's no in-depth questioning because they have no knowledge of what they're really talking about other than just a very, very superficial idea of what the subject entails. And once you get beyond Little Green Men, Martians, X-Files, Roswell maybe, you know, they're stumped in terms of what they can ask. It's not like a huge social issue or a political issue where you've got teams of investigative journalists, you know, digging into every nook and cranny, unearthing witnesses and talking to them and chasing down where that lead goes to and talking to insiders, you know, talking to contacts, all this kind of thing, which you would get with a normal social or political story. This is something completely different. And it's always down to almost citizen investigators, citizen researchers, and a small amount of journalists. I mean, you know, let's talk about George Knapp, for instance. He's an award-winning journalist out of Las Vegas. He happened to write the foreword for this book, so I'm biased about talking to him. But he's one of the few journalists who have given this subject the time of day and who, you know, are still credible, but also look into UFOs.
Well, as a matter of fact, we've had George on the show, and just recently a station called KDON in Las Vegas was added to our network. So if George wants to listen to the Paracast on real radio as opposed to a podcast, now he can do it. Sure. In any case, we are almost out of time with our main show. What are your plans for the future? Now that you've got this UFO book, how far do you intend to probe UFOs?
The books about the aerial encounters have been quite surprisingly popular, so I've had a lot of positive comments about people who have read the books. So I've just finished the 1953 to 1954 book about aerial sightings, and that should be published in the next couple of months. And I'm also working on the 1955 to 1956 version at the moment. But also, I'm still delving into the Foo Fighters, because I found a whole load of intelligence documents from the early 1940s that look into all these lights that were chasing after Allied aircraft and British aircraft. And I've still got squadron records to look through because that's where some of the sightings information lies. So there is definitely a follow-up to the Foo Fighters book that I wrote in 2020. But also people have asked me, can you write a book about the Pacific sightings as well? Because obviously Foo Fighter type things were seen out there as well in 1944 and 1945. So that is something that I've got on my radar that I do need to write about because I'm interested in that as well. And then in the future, I'd like to write a book about military sightings in the Korean War. That would be one that would fascinate me as well.
So basically, the way you're going, you'll get into the 1970s and 1980s when you are 103 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah, if I can still see it, I can still type. Yeah, that's right.
There are still people who type at old ages. I am very old. We don't reveal how old, except that, you know, it's at least 400 or 500 years, and I can still type. Believe it or not, here, I'm seeing typing. That little tapping is an error message made by my keyboard, but I can still actually type after all these years. But do you think you'll ever write books about more modern sightings?
I guess I might do at some stage. It would have to be the right thing in the right time, and I would have to be in the right frame of mind. Because my background is an aviation historian, I also write books about airfield histories and things like that. I'm quite enamored with old documents. I'm interested in the aviation of the period as well. But yes, I do have an interest in the current events, and a lot of my colleagues in UAP Media UK, they're fascinated by what's happening in the modern times. So yes, I can imagine I could write a book about something that would have happened, you know, in much more contemporary times.
If we want to know more about what you do, do you have a website or someplace we can check you out?
I'm mostly active on Twitter. My handle on Twitter is @borders750. But yes, I do have a website, which is rivercountrybooks.com. So that's Riva, spelled R-E-I-V-E-R-S.
So you self-publish?
I do, yes. Yeah, it's the easiest way to do it, funny enough, and I don't have to pay out lots of money to get to somebody to edit the book either.
And also in terms of printing, you can use print on demand. I need 100 copies tomorrow. You get 100 copies if I need one, which is a big thing. Getting that one through 10 copies, you can get it. That's changed, I think, the publishing industry substantially. The major publishers now deal mostly, I think, with high-volume books. By the way, you can find us on Twitter, as long as Elon Musk doesn't completely mess it up. And having heard that criticism, I think we'll disappear from Twitter. Look for the Paracast. We're already semi-disappeared from Facebook because they won't let the Paracast.com URL appear. The same is true for Tim Swartz's site, which is conspiracyjournal.com. Conspiracyjournal.com. That's all the news that they do not want you to know. We also sell branded merchandise at theparacast.shop. Don't you like all those new extensions for web domains? Theparacast.shop or theparacast.store. And that's, of course, with logos on T-shirts and stuff. We also have a streaming service called The Paracast Plus at theparacast.plus, where you have quick sign-up information to get going with it. We also offer a special deal with the coupon code UFO20 or UFO20. We give you a 20% discount on 5-year and lifetime subscriptions. We give you the After the Paracast podcast, where Graham will return. And we also give you this show without the network ads, free of the network ads. That's the way to get it. It just goes on from segment to segment without interruption. The Paracast Plus. Graham Rendell, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you, Jane. It's been great to speak to you. Thanks very much.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. That's 800-932-5140.